Well, let's talk about why LeBron, though, deserves now to be on this trustworthy list. I mean, he looks like he's in complete command. He's happy. The offense is absolutely rolling. He's getting the basket basically at will. He's back to looking like, you know, he's playing AAU against these Eastern Conference teams. And that makes them scary.
And what's great about LeBron is that you almost don't even need to say anything. I mean, it's May. LeBron is LeBron, and he's doing his thing again. Like, they're going to the finals. I mean, the Heat Cavs will be pretty great. But LeBron, he's been doing this for a decade now. Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, I've got Ben Golliver. Ben, what's going on?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm up here in Portland covering this Warriors-Blazers series. We're waiting approximately 7 days for Game 3. Hopefully, Steph Curry will have a new leg by then. It does seem a little fishy that they're have this long break right when they need the MVP and TV ratings monster back in the league. But
it's good. I like it. I enjoy the sort of lazy rhythm of the playoffs every year. The Spurs and Thunder get going, and then it's like, all right, we're going to take 5 days off, but enjoy game three next weekend. And I like it.
Yeah, the poor Blazers, they had to get ready for this Warriors series in like 17 minutes. And then they're like, oh, by the way, Steph's almost coming back. So we're going to just take 2 weeks here until we can get Steph on the court to play game three. But hey, works out for the defending champs. They're definitely not complaining. They're in total command of the series. So it's a good time.
It's good for everybody. It's good for everybody that the Warriors seem to have sort of regained their footing a little bit. And the reports are positive, which is a good thing. How much have you been traveling?
Well, just up to the Bay for 1 and 2, and it was an amazing.
Oh, so you were in Oracle. I didn't know that.
I was. It was a really amazing scene there, especially game two. I mean, game one, it was one of those games where the road team just had no chance. I mean, just forget about it. It was done within 4 minutes, 6 minutes, something like that. Game two, the anxiety was very real as that game was unfolding. You know, Gerald Henderson's hitting like off the dribble 3-pointers. And the people like right in front of the press row, the fans are just like, you've got to be blanking kidding me, like freaking out. And, you know, it goes into the fourth quarter. The Blazers had really, you know, pretty good control of the game the whole way. And then Draymond Green just completely takes over. And I mean, he's a force of nature at this point. I know we constantly say, oh, this guy deserves as much attention as possible. Superstar, all NBA first team, blah, blah, blah. But you still can't say enough about him. He's just ridiculous to watch. And also in person, too. It just takes it to the next level.
Yeah, I like watching these the new Warriors a little bit. There's like a little underdog vibe to them, and it adds a little a fun wrinkle. It reminds me of like the We Believe team a little bit. And the crowds at Oracle have been wild, more so than they even were with Steph, which is pretty crazy.
Well, this gets me in a little trouble, but I do wonder if they're just slightly spoiled, because in game one, there was like 4 minutes left. It was a 15 point game and people were leaving. It's game one of a second round playoff series. Now, I'm not calling out the fan base by any means. Warriors fans know I love them. But come on. I mean, 15 points, 4 minutes, like that game's not over. And where are you rushing to? It was like
I don't know. 15 points, 4 minutes. That game is pretty well in hand, especially against the Blazers are OK, but it's not like you're dealing with like a sleeping giant there.
All right. Well, let's have a philosophical debate here. Is it ever OK to leave a sporting event early? I say no, under any circumstances.
Oh, man, I can't even tell you how many Wizards games I've left in disgust.
Well, you shouldn't have gone in the first place.
Like 5 or 6 times this year, I walked out halfway through the fourth quarter being like, I'm never coming to a Wizards game again. And also, I mean, I don't know if you're up big, like it's kind of a pain in the ass if you metroed to a game. I mean, I don't know. It's like traffic is so annoying that I'm willing to be a bad sports fan if the game is in hand.
I get what you're saying, but I just have absolutely no sympathy for it whatsoever. Deal with the traffic, stop whining, and watch the entire game. You never know what might happen. Who knows? You know, you might get Dion Waiters punching Manu Ginobili in the face before he throws the ball to Greg Popovich in the final seconds of the game. I mean, that was a close game, obviously, but that could happen in any game. I mean, you could have craziness, never That's before true. Seen stuff.
It's true.
Well, like, what about the Raptors fans who left Kyle Lowry's buzzer beater of game one? I mean, where are you going? What is there to do that's better than potentially watching them try to close a 6-point gap in the last minute, 8-point gap, whatever it was? Just stay in your seats. It's not that hard. What about the Heat fans during the finals who are banging on the glass to get back in the arena? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. In general, I would say I am team do whatever you want because I hate traffic more than I love sports. However, that's the one game when the Heat fans left during the finals, it was like, that's not forgivable. Like that, because that was also the last game of their season. Potentially anyways, it was game six of the finals. So, yeah, that was one where like a bunch of people were making fun of Heat fans. And then there was like a whole other like backlash against that on the internet where it was like, people can do whatever they want. Like, and that's true, but it was still really a bad look for the like 10,000 Heat fans who left that game early.
I mean, it was so bad. Chris Bosh called them out the next day at practice so hard. Like that was one of the most unbelievable. I almost dropped my recorder and my cell phone when I was like at that scrum listening to him just completely call out the Heat fans for, you know, basically don't show up again at the next game if you're just going to leave.
Were you at game six of the finals?
Sure was. It was awesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, that whole series was just ridiculous. But the day after interview where Chris Bosh is just unloading bombs on the Heat fans, and he's like a nice guy and friendly, like I'm pretty sure he's won the PBWA like media awareness award or whatever, and he's just going hard on it was great. Everybody was standing there was just like shocked, and then they won game seven, so it worked out. But
yeah, I'm insanely jealous. That's the best basketball game I've ever seen, probably. But let's get into it. Let's get into this week after our digression on fan ethics. Let's talk playoffs. I want to talk trust issues, Ben. Who do you trust least in the playoffs here? We each will come up with like five or six names. You came up with a list beforehand, right?
Well, sort of, yeah. But okay. I think there's...
You got a little group. We could switch off, basically.
I'm going to try to say the most obvious, and then you tell me if you agree.
Okay.
Is it the Toronto... Go for it. Is it the Toronto Raptors?
Absolutely. I'm so out on Toronto right now. I don't trust anyone involved in their operation. It's like... Damari Carroll hasn't really showed up over the last couple months. Dwayne Casey... doesn't appear to know what he's doing. DeMar DeRozan, like, I don't know. I mean, Drake, like basically every single luminary from Toronto is overrated. And wow. I mean, Drake's album sucked. The city of Toronto is great. I'm a big fan of Toronto, the city. I'm a big fan of poutine, Canadians in general. But like the Raptors just, I'm ready to take a break. I kind of want them to blow this up this summer because I can't like Valanciunas, another person who's just like kind of good and then also deeply overrated. Like I'm sick of hearing that this is going to be the year where Valanciunas turns the corner and becomes sort of like a relevant player in the NBA. Like, come on, man.
Right now, you literally sound like you ate chewing tobacco for breakfast. Like,
no, I just like it's this. We've done this every year with the East, with teams like the Raptors and the Hawks, and I'm just kind of ready to move on because the other thing is like the first 5 months of the season are about how this is the year for these guys, and I do feel bad for Toronto because their fans are awesome. But yeah, I'm over it.
Okay, I want to just have one little clarifying thing. I'm with you on the Kyle Lowry being untrustworthy. I mean, the whole staying in the gym to shoot until like 5 a.m. thing is like, bro, like don't be that guy. Like, just don't.
I feel bad. I feel bad for Lowry because like remember when we a couple weeks ago we talked about the Nick Anderson thing with the Magic from their 30 for 30.
For sure.
This has that kind of vibe to it where he's hurt. And then now I think it's mental too. And I mean, Lowry like 2 months ago, he would have been in my like five most trustworthy players in the league. But like now, I don't know. I think he's physically not right. And it's becoming like a Tiger Woods thing where there's there's mental aspects to it also.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because I think if they were playing to their capabilities, they would have a chance in this series. But I'm ready to write them off against the Heat, even though the Heat aren't super duper trustworthy. I think Miami's going to have, you know, pretty firm control of that series and take it. And it's mostly self-inflicted from Toronto's part. That's tough. Well, here's one for you. Are the Hawks untrustworthy or are they just completely overmatched?
You know what? That's a good point. I had the Hawks on my least trustworthy list, but yeah, I mean, I think they're just in a bad situation. They just don't have the talent to match up with the Cavs, and LeBron is a horrible matchup for them. So I would say more overmatched. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I entered that series thinking it was going to be quick just because of the Eastern Conference Finals. I was so bitter at that Eastern Conference Finals last year, and this has been worse. Congratulations. And I think it's really setting up so nicely for LeBron and Cleveland because his load is so much lighter than it was last year during the playoffs. He looks so much happier too. And then of course that gigantic game two explosion. I mean, games like that aren't going to come around very often, but just sort of the general vibe around that game, you know, all signs are pointing to Cleveland. So to me, I'm just going to throw Atlanta in the overmatched, like, cute story category. Nothing about them says, I mean, they, you know, maybe one, maybe they could push it to six if they're really lucky. But once you're kind of talking in that conversation, once you're framing it that way, it's just kind of like, what's the point?
It's already over.
Yeah, exactly.
Charles Barkley's dismissiveness and contempt for the Hawks is a favorite playoff tradition of mine. I think by the inside the NBA, he just gets more and more disrespectful every Hawks game.
Here's another good one just on that same topic for ethics. Should the Hawks tweet a crying Jordan about themselves when they're in the middle of the game two blowout, just getting completely trounced by Cleveland's 3-point shooting? And then they put up that little graphic that's got their score with crying Jordan's face. Charles clearly thought that was inappropriate. Where do you stand?
Did he? Was Charles? Did Charles weigh in on the?
I thought that's what I saw.
I missed it last night.
I'm pretty sure.
But yeah, no, I'm not really a fan of the, like, team Twitter accounts that try to, like, jazz it up a little bit with some personality. Like, I kind of want my, I mean, I don't really know what I want or need from a team Twitter account, but I don't need them to, like, try to participate in, like, weird Twitter or, like, Photoshops. And, like, so I was definitely out on that. But the Hawks, a lot of people love the Hawks social media team. So no shots. I just don't like any personality Twitter or personalities in my team Twitter accounts. So trying to walk a line here. But yeah, I think that's totally lame.
You're leaving games early and you do not want to be entertained in any way. Okay.
No, I want to be entertained by people, but I'm not, like, corporations pretending to be cool.
No, I feel you. It's really annoying when something goes viral and you've got to, like, hear from Tide Bleach about, you know, whatever the latest trend is. It's like, bro, we don't care. You know,
yeah, what it's, the detergent, like, whatever.
What the detergent company thinks about Selena Gomez. Like, we're out. This is good. You know, we're fine.
So can I give you someone from my least trustworthy list? Uh-oh. Is Billy Donovan.
Oh, I'm so surprised. Good Lord.
I mean, like, come on, man. There were some moments in game two of the Spurs. I mean, obviously game one was a disaster for all kinds of reasons. The defense was a complete mess. But even in game two, where the Thunder were in control for most of that game, and certainly in the fourth quarter, Donovan made, like, a lot of head scratching decisions. Do you remember the possession where he put, it was coming out of a timeout. They ran a play to get a wide open look for Andre Roberson, who I don't think I've ever seen him make a three. And then they pull him, and then they throw Dion. I love Dion, but having him inbound the ball made no sense whatsoever. And that kind of got lost. But, like, why the hell was he there? He's 6'3".
Yeah, so I'm looking up Roberson's career stats. He's 0 for 1,273 from the field. So he's never made a shot.
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's, they've got to know that. So, like, how do you feel about Billy D?
I don't know what they were doing there. Well, here's my question about the Thunder. Which game do you think was sort of more representative, game one or game two? Because remember last week I was going on about how I thought the Thunder were going to be exposed. I didn't think they were going to get as exposed as they did in game one. But when I look at those two games, San Antonio played so poorly in game two. They were missing so many shots in the first quarter. They just seemed completely off. They didn't have that Warriors-like gear to kind of like just play through it down to the end, but they came pretty close. And then Oklahoma City still had some of the same issues that you're talking about, closing out decision-making. Putting Deion Waiters in charge of the entire game on the sideline is just absolutely unforgivable. And what people really forget is the second part, that he threw the ball away. Like, after clearing out Ginobili, he still threw the ball away.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
with Donovan, like, I feel like it's unfortunate with NBA fans and NBA internet. Like, it's almost like there are like made men with basketball Twitter who can do no wrong. Like the Brad Stevens, the Frank Vogels, we'll get to Vogel. Or like the Tibbs. And then there are certain guys who, like, if you're not in that group, or you just like get second guessed at every turn, which I feel like Billy Donovan is in that category.
100%.
And it's not entirely fair. However, there are just certain, like,
I don't really trust
OKC. To answer your question, I feel like game two was more representative in that I think OKC is going to have late game issues that are going to probably be the difference in this series.
Okay, I lean more towards game one, not in blowout fashion, but the way that game went down, I lean that towards that being more representative. And I also think, like, we have to hold Billy Donovan accountable for his team in the biggest game of its season completely laying an egg in game one. You know, I mean, that's unforgivable. Yeah. That goes straight to coaching. And just the weird body language and Kevin Durant's sort of like passive aggressive post game press conference, that was just all off from the start. So that goes to the coach. I think, you know, I think he took some responsibility for it, don't you?
Yeah. And I will say, in the positive category with Donovan, he was phenomenal in his game two post game press conference.
Oh yeah.
I would trust that guy to keep a secret or to not snitch. I mean, he sort of did his thing, and so that was enjoyable.
It was fantastic. The only two people in the building who didn't see the push off were Mark Davis and Billy Donovan.
Yeah, like pretending he had no idea what they were talking about. It was solid. Give me another name.
Okay, this one's going to be a little controversial, probably a little surprising for me, because I've, been one of his biggest stands for, you know, basically the last 15 years. I'm not really trusting Tim Duncan on the court right now, and I'm finding myself thinking, like, Pop might need to just pull him a little bit earlier, cut those minutes down just a little bit more, and ride with some of these other big guys.
Duncan was on my list as well.
Whoa.
I felt bad about it. There were a couple plays in game two where he had sort of wide open looks that just didn't drop. And like he's not finishing as well. He's a little slower on the rotations. And not that I'm really the guy to be breaking down rotations, but he just looks a little bit off. And it might be time to sort of mix in Boris and David West a little bit more. I also think that when they go smaller, they are even more dangerous, which is tough though against OKC, because they've also got Steven Adams and Cantor, who is actually coming into this series. I would have trusted Cantor less than anyone, but he's actually done pretty well.
Well, game one, I thought was hilarious because Boban was like the canter stopper. It was like, look, I'm like, I'm you, except that they increased the size in Photoshop by 25%. Like, and so, you know, like he's like just looms over him. And so that was actually really fun to watch in the garbage time of game one, where Canter's just getting swallowed whole. But yeah, no, he had a pretty good game too. I mean, that's kind of Oklahoma City's, you know, bread and butter in terms of second chance points, pounding the glass. They have to win that to win the series. So Canner's got to be a part of it. And I'm wondering, you know, like, can Duncan get back to being that sort of board controlling presence? You know, it hasn't really happened. Even when you look at back at the first round series against Memphis, you know, they're playing better. Their plus minus is better when he's off the court compared to when he's on. And so I don't know. I'm just a little nervous. And I think they need him for this series. They might not need him for the Western Conference Finals. They might not need him for the finals. You know, if Cleveland continues to go with this Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, front court, you know, maybe Duncan, if he's not playing well, maybe he can, you know, be de-emphasized. But they need him right now. They need a better Tim Duncan. I'm calling you out, Tim Duncan. You got to do it.
So after this podcast, I can guarantee two things are going to happen. The Raptors are going to win game two, and Tim Duncan is going to put up like 26-12 on Friday night.
Well, look, I'm great with that, because after game two of the Clippers series against the Blazers, that's exactly what I did. Said, Damian Lillard, you're 2-10 in your last 12 playoff games. You're shooting like 17-18% from 3-point line since you hit the game winner and the series winner against Houston 2 years ago. It's time to step up. What do you know? They win 4 straight, win the series. So I'm taking full credit for that. And when the Spurs roll off 3 more wins and win this series in 5 games, and Tim Duncan is clearly the best player on the court, I'm going to take credit for that too.
All right, good. So do we have any other people who we trust least?
Let's see here. Well,
Dion Waiters has got to be on the list. I don't trust Dion Waiters. I love Dion Waiters, and I frankly, the fact that I don't trust him is why I like him.
Okay,
like anything is possible.
What about Anderson Varejao?
I don't have strong Varejao opinions, but I don't understand why the Warriors signed him, and I don't understand why he plays as often as he does.
Well, the funniest part to me is that Warriors fans have just completely not adopted him. I don't know if it's like the residual, you know, he's coming from Cleveland and that's who they beat last year, and they don't really want to welcome him. Maybe they were nice to him when he first showed up, but everything I hear from the Warriors fans about Varejao is like, this guy should never see the court. You know, he doesn't do it on offense. He doesn't do it on defense. Why aren't we playing Festus Ezeli? And then in game two, like, who's the hero down the stretch? It's Festus Ezeli with the amazing, you know, pick and roll defense, you know, taking away Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And the Warriors fans just screaming, you know, we never want to see Varejao play on the court again. So I think he needs to be on that list. Did you see his leg whip of Gerald Henderson?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I support any dirty play against Gerald Henderson.
Well, look,
that's my hot take.
It was so bad that it led to 2 series of double technical fouls. Like, they had the double technicals. They continued to yell at each other for like 5 minutes. Varejao wasn't even in the game, and he gets a second double technical because he's still talking to Gerald Henderson. It's like, dude, you're on the Warriors. Like, haven't you realized that everyone else around you is like always happy all the time, shooting 3-pointers like it's Shangri-La? Like, you don't need to be like this hardcore, like leg whipping, you know, jujitsu master. But anyway, it's kind of a weird fit.
No, I like that.
I'm putting him on the list.
Gerald Henderson and Dante Jones both lost me for life. At Duke, they were part of some of my least favorite Duke teams ever. Varejao, though, I mean, like, I don't understand it when they brought him in. It was considered like kind of a shrewd signing, but he hasn't been very effective for 2-3 years. I mean I know some people in the league who say that he's a lot of fun and like a great guy to be around and party with, so maybe there's just like a chemistry aspect to it, which is fine, but then don't put him on the court. Like, I mean Ezeli is just a better player.
Yeah, I agree, he's a better player, and I also think he's a better matchup against Portland too. And I mean, I think the Warriors' success against the Blazers really has been about controlling that paint and making life really difficult for their guards, and Ezeli does it much better than Varejao does, you know, basically. Yeah. No questions asked. And he also finishes those lobs pretty athletically. You know, the Draymond Ezeli connection's a real thing. It's been there for a while. It's a great source of points when they get kind of bogged down a little bit in the half court. So to me, just no more Andy. We're good. You know, yeah. save him for the finals. If you get the matchup against Cleveland, maybe put him out there so he can get the standing ovation.
I think that's one of the reasons they brought him in, is just to psych out LeBron. And hey, more power to you, Golden State. I like that. Let me ask you.
Didn't we say they should hire Blatt as their like an assistant coach and just put him on the bench? It's basically the same thing as that, just in player form.
They actually really should do that. Because I mean, they're going to need assistance. Luke Walton's going to take like half that staff. Like, bring in the old fighter pilot from Cleveland. So between Kyrie and Westbrook, who do you trust more or less?
Always Westbrook. He's more proven. Kyrie's having a really nice playoffs though, and it couldn't come at a better time. It's really nice when the body language between Kyrie and LeBron is positive, and it's really painful when it's negative. That's why everybody reacts so much when they seem off. But
yeah, so I think that's a big factor for the Cavs, is that they're playing some of these weaker teams in the East and winning ostensibly big games. And it's allowing them to like get some momentum and remember that basketball can be fun, which is it's kind of a novel concept after the last like 7 months with LeBron. But I think it could really help them going into the finals.
For sure. And just to go back to Westbrook real quick, I mean, the reason why I trust him is part of what we talked about last week, which is if he's getting out on transition, you know, that's a huge X factor of the series. Didn't happen at all in game one, but he was able to do it in game two, and that's the game they took, you know. So if he can keep doing that, especially when they get back home, you know, again, that's going to be one of their big methods to, you know, pulling the upset against the Spurs. So the fact that he's already shown he's done it, the fact that, you know, he really has a larger role than Kyrie. Doesn't it kind of feel like Kyrie's almost the designated scorer on that team?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly the designated dribbler.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, it's Westbrook's doing a lot out there in terms of playmaking for others and setting the tone, better defensive energy, although it gets him in trouble a lot. I would say Westbrook's more trustworthy.
Okay. I'm not sure where I stand, because there was also like a period late in the third quarter where Russ looked like he was about to like self-combust, basically. And literally got benched. But even before he got benched, he like flipped out on it was either a ref or one of his teammates, and then totally spaced out on defense and for a fast break that was going the other way, and then got benched and kind of caught. I think it was Durant who was trying to calm him down on the sideline. So it's like there's never a dull moment with the Westbrook experience.
Put it this way, though. Would you, if you swapped them, if you put Westbrook on the Cavs, God, that'd be unbelievable to have Westbrook and LeBron on the same team. Like, wouldn't you like that team more and then like the Thunder with Irving less? I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yes. I think that's a good way to put it. I think for me right now, I'm cautiously optimistic with both of them. But yeah, I definitely, Westbrook is a level above Kyrie.
I mean, they're both going to face unbelievable amounts of pressure going forward here. And I think that's a key thing. Yeah. A key thing with this trustworthiness is, like you're saying, there's no room for these little outbursts from your superstar player if you're the Thunder. Like, you don't have that margin of error. Westbrook's got to lock in. And as the series goes and the pressure mounts and we get these weird scenarios like the end of game two, he's got to be rock solid. KD's got to be rock solid, because those other guys, you know, they're all question marks.
All right. So real quick, let's move on. Let's go with, give me your three most trustworthy people in the going forward for the rest of the playoffs.
I'm going to give you two, and I think they're a cut above everybody else right now. Draymond Green, LeBron James. I'm in on both of
really?
Them. Really? Really. Absolutely.
You did not name Kawhi.
Well, Kawhi, you know, his shot selection in game two got to me a little bit. Like, he still was fairly efficient, but he was going to the hero ball, you know, contested jumpers a little bit too much. I understand he's got his own Jordan brand logo now, so he's made the leap.
His logo is great, by the way.
His logo is unbelievable.
For someone who doesn't have like any trace of personality, you need a killer logo. Any listeners, I would suggest Googling Kawhi Leonard's giant hand logo for Jordan. It's pretty solid.
I mean, it's on the level of like Mayan architecture or Stonehenge. Like, there's a lot to it. Like, it's got his initials.
There's a lot going on. Yeah.
It's intricate.
It's like the Milwaukee Brewers logo. Like, there's a lot to see there. But yeah, go on.
So I understand he's got his own logo. I understand he's like yelling at refs now a little bit more. So he's definitely progressing more in towards that superstar mold, which I love to see. But we've talked about the Thunder's defensive issues forever and ever and ever. And some of those shots, I thought it's always a delicate balance, because you do want him to really assert himself as the number one guy, right? But if you continue to move the ball, work the offense, you're going to get good shots. That's the way the Spurs did it. It's not like he hijacked the game by any stretch of the imagination. There was just some couple of shots late in that game too, where I was like, come on, Kawhi, like, you got to do a little bit better than that. Obviously, I still trust him, but I think this is more, it's not about Kawhi. This is more just about Draymond and LeBron being on a different level right now.
Can I add two people to that list?
Let's do it.
Number one, Dwayne Wade.
Oh.
He is still coming through after all these years. I wrote about him earlier this week. I mean, I think of him more as kind of like a evil genius villain type. And for the last like 6 years, he's been on the verge of being washed up and he still comes through. I did it again in game one against the Raptors. Like, I haven't always loved him.
Well, for all the Jordan haters out there, purple shirt guy has got to be a hero. Because he completely cost the Hornets the series. I don't care what anyone else says. I mean, why would you ever go after Dwayne Wade late in game six? The guy had made 1 3-pointer since early November, and he makes 2 back-to-back in less than 3 minutes because you're a purple shirt guy thinking it's so important that you're going to heckle Dwayne Wade. And everything people say about these coaches that are morons, what are you doing, making these terrible decisions? That's all true about purple shirt guy. What was he doing? I mean, seriously, like, not only can his wife or whoever is with him not get through to him, he doesn't feel any social embarrassment about all the people around him. He literally put himself in front of the entire team and the franchise, which is owned by Michael Jordan, and he didn't realize that it was his fault. I mean, there's such a level of cluelessness and ego is unbelievable.
Yeah, you don't want to piss off Dwayne Wade. He's been doing this for the last 10 years, making people look bad and breaking people's hearts.
Was there any moment in that stretch for that final 3 minutes of that game where you thought the Hornets were going to win under any circumstances? Of course not.
No, well, there was, though, because Kemba was playing so well that it just felt like he was going to sort of take things to another level for the Hornets, and the crowd was getting into it. It just felt like one of those games. And then Wade just silenced everyone.
Well,
it was pretty cool to watch.
Oh, it was great to watch. And I think I'm making your argument, which is he does belong in that trustworthy group, because I was watching that game and I was like, yeah, okay, this is a real game. Like, it's not, you know, a complete collapse here, but there was no way he was going to lose that game. I mean, he was going to make sure it happened one way or another. He wills that crazy turnaround jumper in. It was a great performance, and it's awesome. It's awesome to see.
I hated Dwayne Wade during the peak of the Heatles teams, and but I came to respect him, and because he just always comes through like that, and I still, it's a mix of disdain and respect with me and Wade. Well, so I've got one other guy. My most trustworthy man in the playoffs.
Okay.
Matthew Dellavedova.
Oh boy. I feel like this might be a reach.
I will live and die with Deli, and I think that he is a legitimate factor for the Cavs.
Well, I'm not going to argue that he's a legitimate factor, but so far we've listed Draymond Green, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade.
And now Deli. And Deli.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to do more than that to sell me on Deli.
I mean, I don't have much more to sell, but he's just going to throw his body around out there. And you know, you're getting like 8 or 9 ugly ass points, a couple cheap shots, and solid defense with Deli every single night in the playoffs. And that counts.
I mean, Deli versus Steph is like an underrated, I can't wait to watch that in the finals, if it happens, matchup, which makes no sense at all, but it really is true. And, you know, there's so many matchups potentially to look for in that series, but that's definitely right near the top of the list. One last thing on Dwayne Wade, you know, what really bothered me about the Heatles era, probably that stands out almost more than anything, was the fake coughing with him and LeBron with Dirk. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. That was bad.
That was like peak evil Dwayne Wade. Where like you're mocking something, you're mocking Dirk's illness. I mean, come on.
But at the same time, that was also part of, I mean, yes, it was absolutely like the worst. That was a low point for the Heatles in general, but it was also part of what made that finals like the most satisfying finals I'll probably ever see. Because Dirk coming back after that to beat them was just fantastic.
Yeah, that was an insane finals. I remembered the outrage after Greg Doyle, you know, CBS Sports, kind of saying LeBron was shrinking and all that. And people were like so angry and like ready to tar and feather him in the media room. And then like LeBron just completely lays down the very next game. Oh, Good times.
Oh, man. Anyway, it was great.
Anyways, but no, so let's talk about why LeBron, though, deserves now to be on this trustworthy list. I mean, he looks like he's in complete command. He's happy. The offense is absolutely rolling. He's getting the basket basically at will. He's back to looking like, you know, he's playing AAU against these Eastern Conference teams, and that makes them scary.
And what's great about LeBron is that you almost don't even need to say anything. I mean, it's May. LeBron is LeBron, and he's doing his thing again. Like, they're going to the finals. I mean, the Heat Cavs will be pretty great, but LeBron, he's been doing this for a decade now. And it's kind of like, this is, I don't think we're going to truly appreciate him until we look back and realize that he's like basically played like 110 games a year. And at this level for, I mean, since like pre-Obama, I mean, it's getting kind of ridiculous. Like, the Bush administration, LeBron was beating the Pistons.
So his playoff averages 8.7 rebounds, 6.7 assists. These are the averages over 184 games, 42.4 minutes per game in the playoffs. Never missed a game for any reason during the playoffs. Ridiculous. Unbelievable. Yeah. And now he's got help. I mean, I think this, are we ready to call this his best cast? It's up there.
I mean, he's got Delly, man. Yeah, you're right. It's now it's really scary.
I mean, when you're looking 1-9, I think you can make a pretty strong case this might be his best cast. You know, they don't have that number two. Like Kyrie, I still don't think is quite where Wade was, you know, for the two titles.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of really helpful pieces, and they fit together. And when they're playing well, everybody looks amazing. And guys like Shumpert, J.R. Smith, you know, they really pop too. So it's setting up for a better finals, I think, maybe than I was fearing a few months ago.
Yeah, it's good. If nothing else, the Cavs run will be able to trick us into feeling like the finals are going to be really dramatic. And then we'll see what actually happens. I'm not sure.
Draymond Green, real quick on the trustworthiness. I mentioned him earlier.
Draymond is ridiculous. Like his story is officially getting as incredible as Steph in terms of his rise from nowhere.
And I think he was farther off the map. And not only that, but like the NBA basically had to change to like because of him. You know what I mean? Like Steph is like in his own little world. Like everyone's going to shoot a lot more 3-pointers because of him, but he's still like the complete anomaly. But like Draymond was so valuable and his combinations of skills were so helpful and they translated so directly to winning on both offense and defense that now every team in the league is trying to find people who are like him. And then the players who are the most similar to him are now like finally getting the credit they deserve. You know, guys like Paul Millsap, it's like, well, he's almost like Draymond Green. So now all of a sudden he's in a conversation as one of the best players in the league where he's completely ignored for years. It's crazy. It's been upside down. And he's been the total driving force of these Stephless Warriors. I mean, Klay has been great, huge scoring numbers. But the control that Draymond Green has defensively over a game actually has me rethinking the whole defensive player of the year thing. Like I'm almost regretting siding with Leonard.
I mean, yeah, Draymond's incredible. And I actually really like watching these Warriors without Steph, because it sort of underscores how good Draymond has been. And you get to watch him work on defense. And I mean, some of the things he does are kind of ridiculous. Like he certainly, I think your point about people saying like he's kind of like Draymond, like it's not quite as ridiculous as comparing someone to LeBron, but a lot of like tweeners, especially with the draft, I'm going through the mock draft for tomorrow, are being like, we'll have the Draymond label attached to them. And like, I don't know if we're going to see another guy that can do what he does, because the only two people in the league are LeBron and Draymond that can play all around the way he does.
Yeah, it's nuts. His playmaking ability as a passer, point forward, has really, I mean, it's amazing how quick he's evolved in that role. I think it was probably always there and they just had to turn him loose. But he legitimately plays like a point guard. He kind of reminds me at times when he's running their offense, he kind of reminds me of Chris Paul. Like, he's that demonstrative, and like, he knows where everybody should be, and he makes the right reads, and he tries to get the ball to guys who are hot, tries to get people going. Like, he really does have that point guard, like, traditional point guard mentality, and just to have it in his body type is so weird.
It's pretty wild. Now they got Steph coming back. We got his what did he have, like, platelet rich therapy or something?
Oh yeah, PRP. Yeah, that's the thing that's been going around. Nobody knows if that works.
I love it, man. If I were a team, I would just make up these surgeries and therapies that my guys are going through. It's like, because I will believe anything with the level of sports science that we have now.
Well,
Kobe's plasma knees or whatever.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is with the PRP, I mean, that was a big Brandon Roy thing. So it was giving me PTSD flashbacks from those terrible Blazers eras. Yeah. So we should probably I know we should probably go short on that, but, hopefully it works. I mean, but at the same time, do they need him? I think that's a fair question. And if they go up 3-0 or if they go up 3-1, after these games in Portland,
why bring him back?
It's tempting to just let him sit, you know, and let him use, like, because really practices for the Warriors are going to be like better preparation for the Spurs than almost any game in the NBA. You know, you're going against really quality, talented guys, balanced teams. You're going to have a lot of time before the Western Conference Finals, potentially. I just think there's no rush at all. Even if he wants to get out there, it's like, just go with the cautious approach. If he doesn't play this round, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way you bring him back, if he claims that he's ready now, I would sit him through these next two Blazers games, and then if they lose both of those and it's 2-2 back at Oracle, like, maybe you bring him back then. But at this point, you're playing with house money. Like, now that Draymond and Clay have been able to step up, and save him. I mean, we America needs a healthy Steph Curry.
They sure do. Here's one behind the scenes nugget. I was in the back of the press conference room the other night.
Golliver exclusive.
Yeah, I'm not going to completely reveal it, but so Damian Lillard was doing his post game press conference, and he was talking about how the Blazers had controlled the game for the first three and a half quarters. And he kept saying, "We controlled the game. We controlled the game." And one of the key Warriors players was in the back of the press conference room watching this. And he was, not agreeing, let's just say it that way, with what Lillard was saying and Lillard's perception of the game. So I don't know if that means they're going to.
Was it a front court player or a back court player?
I'm not gonna disclose that. I'm just gonna say,
oh god,
one of the key players. And so that makes me wonder.
There's definitely so much off the record shit talking from the Warriors that people can't. Because even I've heard some things from certain Warriors players that we can't really like talk about, but they that team's feeling itself for sure.
Oh, the confidence is on 17 out of 10. I mean, it's a next level. And actually, it was pretty funny. I don't know if people caught this, but during the press conference, they asked Klay Thompson what he thought about Mo Harkless. And he was like, well, you know, Mo Harkless, like, it looked almost like he was trying to figure out who Mo Harkless was.
Which is a perfectly fair reaction.
So he was already like kind of getting into shade territory with Mo Harkless. But then he was like, well, yeah, you know, he's tall. He's a little bit longer. You know, he's longer than CJ. So he's not really someone that I can just shoot over every single time.
Nice.
It's like, sorry, CJ McCollum, your length has been questioned here in this press conference.
Yeah. Sorry, CJ McCollum, you're 6'2". Yeah. All right, well, let's finish up with what do you think of the Frank Vogel situation? Well, let's do 5 minutes on the Indiana Pacers, Matt Dollinger's Indiana Pacers.
Well, so first of all, we need to apologize because last week we forgot that Paul George existed when we were naming the most important or the best players in the Eastern Conference. We just went straight to Paul Millsap and left Paul George out for the guys who are, you know, as good basically, or, you know, who's number two behind LeBron in the East. So, yes, obviously Paul George is in that conversation. And I think
how long will he be in the East, Ben?
Bingo.
That's the question.
Bingo.
That's the question I'm asking Dollinger right now.
You read my mind, because I think that's why you make this coaching change if you're the Pacers, right? Like, aren't you feeling some heat to win and win now and win bigger. If you've got this guy who, from an all-around talent perspective, is at the very top of the conference, and you know he's got no real ties to the region, like he doesn't have any particular reason to be in Indiana other than he was drafted there. And, you know, it's almost like a Kevin Durant situation, really, if you think about it. For sure. Free agency is a couple years off, but, you know, you can't be going one and out year after year after year if Paul George is your guy. And you look at the roster, and you, even if you project, you know, improvement from a guy like Miles Turner, how are they going to win a series next year? You know, what's the magic formula for that? I don't really see it right now. So that raises questions about, philosophy. Can you get this offense supercharged? Was Vogel ever going to be able to figure that out? And I think Larry Bird's answer was no. And I trust Larry Bird. I don't think he's a rash guy. They gave Vogel a long time there. It didn't work out.
Yeah, I agree. There have been a lot of hardcore Frank Vogel heads out here in the NBA Twitter streets. And I don't really understand it. I mean, he's a solid coach, very good. He's been successful, but it's not as if, I mean, a lot of people have been baffled by this decision, and it makes some sense to me. I mean, if you look back at the past few years, they've had that one team was the best team in the East for the first 4 months of the season, and then it completely fell apart. Last year, without Paul George, they sort of overachieved, and a lot of people credited Vogel for that. But this year, I mean, they were kind of up and down, and I don't think he's so brilliant that you can't, that it's inconceivable to move on. I think coaches are, their influence wanes over time. And I also think that the culture in Indiana is as responsible for the success as anything else.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of the Tibbs situation in Chicago. It kind of carries over. I think number one, I think that's why some people are freaking out about it, is because you don't want to take an amazing defense for granted. They've had great defenses there year after year. And if you take that for granted, like the Bulls did, you know, that can fall apart on you quickly, like we saw. And that could happen in Indiana too. I mean, you bring in a coach who's got some different philosophy, all of a sudden your defense is no longer, you know, a top five elite type defense. And now you're in the lottery, and everybody's saying, we really wish we had Frank Vogel's defense back. So I could kind of see people being a little bit upset from that standpoint. I also think we should give Frank Vogel credit for handling some of the most difficult personalities in the league.
I mean, That's true.
Can you imagine babysitting Lance Stephenson and Roy Hibbert?
Yeah, I do think he's a really good coach. I'm not saying that he's a bad coach, and I think that he will be very good elsewhere. But I don't think that it's crazy for the Pacers to look at how the past few years have played out and say, maybe we should switch it up here.
Totally. And I hate to be boring, but I completely agree with that. And that's also part of the reason why that's part of the reason why it bothers me with Tibbs, it reminds me of Tibbs, because it was the same situation in Chicago where it's like, they're going to have a really hard time finding a better coach than this guy, but it's clearly time for him to move forward. And I don't think that maybe Vogel had some of the same player resentment issues as there were in Chicago. It seemed like he was pretty well liked. A lot of people kind of came out to his defense. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't find other reasons for this to be time to move on. And I think, you know, you're trying to build a team in the mold of your star player. And a guy like Paul George, he should be able to be a part of an elite offense and an elite defense. And they've only had half that equation. They've tried to plug in these guys, you know, Monta Ellis, some of these other guys around him to kind of supercharge things. It's never really stuck. And even when they had, you know, Lance as the playmaker sort of at his peak years of being locked in, you know, the offense was never really great. So I think they probably just want to start from scratch from that standpoint.
So let me ask you, speaking of starting from scratch though, if you're the Pacers, do you take my old boss Simmons throughout D'Angelo and a top three pick for Paul George?
If I'm the Pacers,
do you take that trade?
No way. I mean, you know how I feel about D'Angelo. I mean, come on. Like, no. Right,
first of all, I'm much higher on D'Angelo than you, which might color my interpretation here. What if they throw in Julius Randle also?
No, I mean, no.
Really?
Julius Randle, to me, he's got serious questions about how good he's going to be in the NBA, like what his true ability is, because he's sort of...
But
here's my thing.
I agree with you. I agree with that.
Okay, real quick on Julius Randle. He's kind of like the anti-Draymond, right? Like, he doesn't have the three-point shooting. He doesn't have the rim protection and the length. He doesn't have a lot of the versatility and basketball IQ. He's very strong. He's good at putting his head down. He's going to go left. He's not great at finishing around the basket area. He just has a lot of serious question marks about.
You don't think Draymond is a blueprint for him?
I think he's like the anti-blueprint. It's like if you could.
No, I think Luke Walton, given two or three years to mold Randall, will be able to get him a lot closer on the spectrum to Draymond than he is right now.
That would make me happier than almost anything in the world. I mean,
you're skeptical.
Look, if that happens, I will love it because I'll get to go watch it 41 times a year at Staples Center and it will be amazing. I really hope that happens. I'm a little skeptical, but I mean, I love the idea. I love the concept. I'm just not sure the execution is going to be there. And if I'm the Pacers, I'm not willing to bet on that. If they get a top two pick, I think that makes it a lot more interesting because then, you know, you're getting
Simmons, you know, or Ingram. Yeah,
exactly. For number three, I wouldn't do it if I were them. I would start to think about it for Russell, Randall, and a top two pick. I think I would. But
what about Russell number one? And that's it. I mean, because I think Russell and Ingram and Miles Turner is like a hell of a foundation to build around. And I think if they keep Paul George, it's not going to be that easy to sort of jump another level.
I'm still taking Ben Simmons number one. So that kind of throws
it's a whole other pie.
I know that kind of throws a wrench into what you're saying, but I see where you're going with it. The fact that Miles Turner is young, you know, that does allow you to do this rebuilding and everybody be synced up. It would be easier. But I don't know. It's tough. I mean, you've got a pretty nice core there, like Paul George and George Hill. I mean, George Hill really isn't one of the most underrated players in the league. I thought he had a great series against Toronto. And I think he's solid. You know, I would go forward with those guys. I wouldn't be rushing to rebuild out of those guys, I guess, if that makes sense. And I also think Miles Turner showed he can be an instant impact guy. I don't think he's necessarily like 3 years away at this point. So I might try to just hang on and find the pieces around Paul George before I would blow it up. But, you know, if his personal feelings change, I think that's the X factor, right? Like he hasn't really made it sound like he's unhappy. If that does change, like if they can't find the right coach to work with them, whatever it might be, then you have to open some of this stuff up. But at this point, I would be trying to make it work before blowing it up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. There's more intrigue there than we would have expected, because I think Bird is clearly not afraid to shake things up if he needs to.
Oh, yeah. Well, would you be afraid of anything if you were Larry Bird? I mean,
that's true. That's true. He's playing another person who's playing with house money. All right. Well, we should wrap things up. I've got a couple announcements here. Should have done this at the top of the show, but it is what it is. First of all, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. And additionally, you should subscribe to us because we're going to be doing more podcasts for the future. Are you ready for our sort of post-game playoff pods next week?
I'm so ready for them because it was my idea. So I'm taking all the credit for it.
I'm glad though, because I was thinking after OKC Spurs game two, I was like, man, maybe I should just call Ben and see if he wants to chop it up here and talk about Deion's inbound pass.
Yeah, we should have Zapruder'd that, no question. And if anything else like that, you know, happens coming along, I think we will. And hopefully we'll be in a situation maybe where, you know, if we're reporting live from games at some point during the playoffs, we'll be able to get some, you know, instant reaction, maybe to press conferences if something happens. So we're going to try to make this more immediate and more reactive to the best action.
Yeah, no, it'll be good. So I'm excited for next week. And in addition, we've got some NFL draft podcasts, Monday Morning Quarterbacks pod and On the Clock, both of which you can find on iTunes. And if you're into tennis, Dick Vitale is also into tennis. And he went on the pod with SI's executive editor, John Wertheim, to talk about his life in sports and the secret to keeping up the fever pitch of energy into his 70s. So check out Beyond the Baseline, SI's tennis podcast with John Wertheim. That's on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play Music. And you can find all of these podcasts on si.com/podcast. Real quick, did you know that John Wertheim worked with Randy Whitman was his camp counselor when Wertheim was like in sixth grade.
That's unbelievable. I did not know that.
Did not ruin him. It was that's a big victory for SI.
That's fantastic. You know, I'm still just shocked you made it through the NFL draft plug without talking about Ezekiel Elliott going to the Cowboys.
I was so pumped. I'm glad. Shout out to the Cowboys and to the NFL for being smart about Ezekiel Elliott. All right. Well, I think that's it. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, shout out to John Wertheim's camp, Randy Whitman.
Randy Whitman, the counselor. All right. We'll see everybody next week. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.